So we will go in media res, as we say in Germany, right to the root of this disease, which was a German guy with the name of Wiskott. You see him on the left, and I'm probably the only one who actually met him. When he was retired, and I was a fellow, actually I was a resident. He was retired at the University of Munich, and his picture, this kind of picture, was hanging in the hallways of Children's Hospital, which is called the Haunersches Children's Hospital in the Lindwurmstrasse. So Wiskott was not an immunologist. He was not even an infectious disease guy. He was a pulmonologist and a part-time hematologist. Why was he not an immunologist? Because there were none at that time. Immunology did not really start, at least related to immune deficiency, until the Second World War, when IVIG became around and immunoglobulins could be measured. Wiskott only could measure platelets, and so he had these patients from one family, three kids, who had, so he called it familial, because three boys. They had thrombocytopenia, and he actually looked at the slides, and he saw that the platelets were small. The kids had eczema and bloody diarrhea, and one or two had otitis media, and they all died in the first 2 years of life. And so he called it Morbus Wellhofii, with a question mark, which was the name, the German name for ITP, and he knew it was not ITP, because if you look at platelets, here on the right side, you see normal size platelets. And if you have ITP, these platelets are actually much larger. But these kids had a few larger ones, but most of them were very small. And that's the reason why we don't count them. The reason now our platelet counts are so low, and the patients don't actually bleed, and there was some question about it, because our machines don't count the small ones; they only count these few larger ones. And so, that's one explanation why a patient who has maybe 5,000 platelets counted by our machine is not bleeding seriously, because he has all these little small platelets, which I call platelet dust. So Wiskott, that was his electronic medical record here. Child A, child B, and child C. And they all had eczema, and they had colitis, otitis is one, they had edema, and then they got severe diarrhea, and here he died. The other one had also colitis, eczema, and that one has otitis media also, and this one had rhinitis and eczema and infected eczema and colitis, and then they all died sort of in between the first and the second birthday. And that's how he described the eczema. It was actually generalized in these kids, not limited to just the antecubital area, which you see often in atopic patients. And that was his first paper, which he presented in 1937, not at an immunologic congress, not an infectious congress, but in a hematologic congress. And that was the pedigree. You see the three boys, and the girls were okay, so he called them familial. He didn't call them inherited, because that was in 1937, Nazi Germany, you were not allowed to have an inherited disease. That was a no-no. And then the other mistake he makes, you see, he concentrates on the fathers. So that these two guys were, he concentrates on the fathers. He did not say it was X-linked, because, why did he not say it was X-linked? Because the X chromosome was not discovered yet. It took 20 more years to discover the X chromosome. And I remember it was in high school when our teachers came excitedly and explained to us two things. One, that there was X and Y, and it was the man's fault if the woman didn't have a boy. Because in the old days, it was always the female's fault. And the other thing, what he said, you know, it's funny. Humans have 48 chromosomes, like the tomato. And they made a mistake. It was 46, but at that time there was a count done, and they thought humans had 48 chromosomes. They actually had 46. So now that's what we call Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome XLT in 2015. You see that sort of more or less the case for the XLT, X-linked thrombocytopenia, and that is the entire picture with bloody diarrhea, recurrent infections to immunodeficiency. That was not recognized until the late 60s when Max Cooper studied these patients and recognized that they had an immune deficiency. And then when these patients survived longer, one identified them as having autoimmunity and malignancies. And of course, then we thought about how to treat these patients. And these are important additional findings that were not recognized until the patient survived into their teens. And that is a whole list of autoimmune problems. Almost three quarters of the patients, when they get old enough, will develop hemolytic anemia is the most frequent one, but also vasculitis of the small and large vessels, neutropenia, small, low numbers of white counts, arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease, and especially in Japan, there is a high percentage of patients which develop IgA nephropathy, and they look like Henlock vasculitis. And they have also higher incidence of food and drug allergies, and that's really a problem for some patients with Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome. And then, of course, mainly B-cell lymphoma is a problem for these patients. And that is a picture which Fred Rosen gave me, taken in the 60s, and you see that this child is miserable. And he died 6 months later of a lymphoma, and you can see he was really very sick and not feeling well, and that was because we didn't have good antibiotics, we didn't have good antifungals, we didn't have IVIG, and the life expectancy at that time was quite low. In the 60s, less than 3 years, 2.8 years in a series for Max Cooper. And then in the 70s, when we got better antifungals and antivirals and IVIG, the life expectancy was 11 years, and currently for classic Wiskotts without transplantation, it's maybe 20 to 30 years, and those are the kind of problems that lead to death in these patients. And that's a patient who just entered college. You can see he's pretty happy. He was diagnosed early in life because the gene was identified. He was prepared for bone marrow transplantation. You see he had eczema and he has bleeding, but he looks pretty good. He went through bone marrow transplantation without problems from a sister, and is now a healthy 20-year-old boy. And what is wrong with their immune system? This is an old study which I did as a fellow. This is an immunization to a fake immunization, bacteriophage VX174, and that is a log scale, so it's 10 times higher. If you immunize here and here, you can see that normals increase their titer over a period of time, 4 weeks, and then you give a second dose, it goes about 10 times higher, and you give a third dose, it goes even higher, and then the normals switch from a primary response, which is IgM, to a IgG response, isotype switching. After a third immunization, almost all antibodies IgG. And look at uncle and his cousin. They make a primary response, but then they fall down to almost zero. They have no immunologic memory. You give them a second dose and a third dose, and they don't increase it, and they don't switch. And that is because WASP is required for this interaction between T and B cells. This is a B cell response, and this is a B T cell response. They got help from T helper cells, and they don't, because WASP is important for cell-cell interaction, for antibody responses, for instance, killing the NK cells, the natural killer cells, can form a synapse with the target cell, and the same thing is true for regulatory T cells. And that's why they have a lot of infections. So, and then in the 80s, the gene for Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome was mapped to the X chromosome. That's a small end of it, that's a large end. You can see there are several other X-linked diseases like X-linked agammaglobulinemia, X-linked SCID, hyper-IgM syndrome, and CGD are all on the X chromosome. And then when the WASP gene was discovered by a fellow in Uta Franke's lab with using cell lines from our patients, the gene was discovered. This is just sort of a schemata. You can see different domains which are all important for the function. And you see here the different mutations, where they are and what type they are. These open circles, those are missense mutations. They are usually mild, and the closed circles are nonsense mutation. They have no protein. Those are usually the severe cases, deletions and insertions, and I will get to that. So there is some correlation between the type of mutation that results in the presence or absence of protein, but if the protein is present, it's still not working properly. So what does this gene and the gene product, the protein, do? So the gene is a medium-sized gene. There are some that have 40 or 50 exons. So this is it's easy to sequence, about 500 amino acids, so it's a good-sized protein. And the gene is transcribed into messenger RNA, and that tells you where the gene is active. And the messenger RNA is exclusively expressed in hematopoietic cells. So although the gene is in every cell, but it's only transcribed in mRNA and into protein in cells from the blood-forming system. And it's located mainly in the cytoplasm, where it plays a role in actin cytoskeleton remodeling, but it's also a small amount, isn't it, on the membrane. That's where cells interact. And it can even be found in the nucleus, and there is a hypothesis that it helps actually other genes to be downregulated or upregulated. And so it participates, as I mentioned, in this immunologic synapse, which is an area where cells interact with other cells on the surface of the cell. And what does WASP do? I already mentioned it. It is involved in this actin polymerization cytoskeleton, so it makes cells move forwards and backwards, and it's a very, very delicate regulation of this actin polymerization. It has essential functions for cell locomotion, moving of cells, cell trafficking. It's very important for signaling with talking to other proteins inside the cell. And so this immune synapse formation between T and B cells, I already explained to you, between dendritic cells and T cells, also between NK cell, natural killer cells, and target cells, and regulatory T cells. And then that's what I was trying here to say, that it's involved in the cytotoxicity of these natural killer cells and CD8 positive cells that bind to target cells, virus-infected cells, malignant cells. And the function that are important for adaptive and innate immunity and immune surveillance. So it has a very central role in the immune system. It dabbles around in all these unique parts of the immune system. And that's why it's such a complicated disease. So what's the immune deficiency in the Viscott-Aldrich syndrome? It depends on WASP expression to a large extent, but there are some exceptions. There is a significant antibody deficiency, so if you have a patient with classic Viscott-Aldrich syndrome, they should actually get IVIG because they cannot interact, the T and B cells cannot interact, and they make a poor antibody response. There is abnormal checkpoints for T and B cell maturation, which results in autoaggressive B cells. So they develop B cells that cannot distinguish between self and foreign, and so they cause autoimmunity. I'm getting ahead of myself here. How can I get forwards here?
Backwards.
Backwards. This goes. Okay, it's on that side. All right. So the other phenotype, in addition to the classic whiskered ostrich, is this so-called X-linked thrombocytopenia, and these are patients from Dr. Albert in Munich. And you can see two brothers. They have the same mutation. 3 year, 10 months old. They have this amino acid substitution. They have all thrombocytopenia. Very little eczema or no eczema, and no immunodeficiency. A very mild form of Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome. And if you look at the mutations, this is a group of XLT patients, and you see most of them have these open circles in exon 1 and 2, which results in amino acid substitution. And these are some splice site mutations which allow a little bit of normal Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome protein expressed. And these are the mutations which we find in classic Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome. Most of them have either missense mutation or insertions or deletions that result in the absence of protein. And that's a study which Dr. Albert has spearheaded in 2010, showing that if you look at a large group, 173 patients with XLT, their life expectancy is quite encouraging. You know, this is a normal German life expectancy of men, and they are essentially the same in classic in the X-linked thrombocytopenia population. But if you look at the so-called event-free survival, that means how long do they get along over time before they get a serious event, you can see that this is pretty miserable, and only 25%. Never had any serious problems. So it is not a completely benign disease, but it is a disease which patients can live with. And those are some of the problems patients accumulate. Infections, you know, again, that's over a period of time, that's a percent of patients. So about 25% of XLT patients get serious infections over a lifetime. And bleeding, it's also interesting that the bleeding, although it's about between 25 and 30%, the serious bleeding stop at around 25 years of age. And I always wondered if this is because the average Westerner is no longer active and sits on the couch in the front of television. But it's amazing that there were no serious bleeds between 28 and 75. Autoimmunity, you can see it occurs in XLT, whereas in classic Wiskott-Aldrich, about 100% will develop autoimmunity and many will develop malignancies. Here it is about 50% develop autoimmunity and about 25% will develop a malignancy, usually a lymphoma. So, you know, if you get this, this is a problem. And so we still are debating what to do with patients who are identified as X-linked thrombocytopenia. And, you know, gene therapy is something to watch for. Bone marrow transplantation is very safe. So we have another. You have another 5 minutes.
Okay.
That is a patient. Two families from Gigi who studied. Two families with intermittent X-linked thrombocytopenia, and they have either normal or low platelets coming up and going. They have the only problem they really have is intermittent petechiae. They have no serious infections, no autoimmunity, and no malignancy so far. And that's the lower limit of normal. You can see they are sometimes up and sometimes down, and nobody knows why. They probably a virus or something comes and they do not reach normal levels, and they have perfectly normal amount of OAS protein, but it's an amino acid substitution, and it's almost what we call a SNP, a single nucleotide difference that may not be very meaningful. And there is another phenotype which I wanted to share with you, and that's congenital X-linked neutropenia. Due to mutations in the WASP gene, they have congenital neutropenia, maturation arrest of myeloid cells, in the infections characteristic for neutropenia, not for Wiskott. Platelet size is normal. They have no autoimmune disease. One patient in the literature has developed lymphoma, and there are, however, asymptomatic family members with the same mutation, so it's not completely penetrant. And I just wanted to tell you about this principle here. Normally, WASP is self-inactivating. It sits there and it bends the distal end over and it's not active. And if something happens that a gene is phosphorylated, now this, when it's phosphorylated, it sort of drives this off because it has a higher affinity and it opens up. And then this end is producing this actin polymerization, and that makes cells move, and then it comes back and it stops moving. So this is a very important aspect, and that precisely there is the mutation in these X-linked thrombocytopenic patients. And so if we look at these mutations, there are loss of function mutations like in Wiskott-Aldrich syndrome and in XLT, and there is this gain of function where the molecule is always active in patients with X-linked neutropenia. And the scoring system, which is now sort of updated, would differentiate between these very mild patients with intermittent X-linked thrombocytopenia and X-linked thrombocytopenia, which have a score of less than 1 up to 2, and they all have thrombocytopenia and small platelets and maybe a little bit of eczema. And then the classic Wiskotts are a score of 3 or 4. They have, in addition to those, they have immunodeficiency and autoimmune disease. And then congenital neutropenia would have nothing except these neutropenia. And then what's important is that X-linked thrombocytopenia, also they may start out with a score of 1 or 2, they can actually move into classic Wiskott in a score of 5 if they develop autoimmune disease, as I showed you, or malignancies. And those were some questions. I hope I addressed them. Can we predict severity from the mutation? Yes, we can, but it's not absolute. There are movements. Some with a severe mutation may be milder, and some with a mild mutation may have a severe phenotype. Test other than WASP mutations and WASP quantitation. You can measure antibody responses, and if there are no antibody responses, like we do it always with FASH, we hit them with IVIG. Variation of blood platelet counts with infections. I noticed that usually if they have infection, the platelets go up. And my often patients come, oh, he's doing well, his platelets are only 5,000. So it's actually not a bad sign if they are down, and the patients usually have no additional problems. Why no bleeding even in platelet count is only 5,000, I explained to you, because we don't count the small platelets. Should we do something about this? I don't think patients should be treated with platelets. This is a disaster. Only when they have a severe bleed, CNS bleed or GI bleed. There are now some drugs that bring up platelets, and I don't know how good that is. When the count are low, my son feels miserable. Why? I don't know. I would just not count the platelets. So he has no excuse to be feeling lousy. What can be done to improve health during allergy season? I think, like everybody else, you go to the allergist, and unfortunately, I am not one of them. So that brings me to the end of my talk. That's Seattle right now. Everything is blooming. We have blue skies, no heat, no humidity. You can see people hang outside, and we also don't have bed bugs. That was, I don't know if you noticed when you arrive in the airport, there's a big sign. It doesn't say how to avoid them. It says how not to bring them home. Here in New Orleans, I've never seen that anywhere else. So I will take a shower. Thank you very much.
Thank you for letting me talk.